Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 10 of Behind the Game podcast, Kids in the Game official podcast. This is Paul O'Connor. On this episode, we were joined by Ben Nickel and Daniel Lee of the New York Excelsior Group. We are talking all things esports. It's an awesome episode for anyone who doesn't know or knows a little bit or is an expert in esports. So without further ado, check it out now. Okay, we are now joined by Ben Nickel and Daniel Lee of the New York Excelsior Group. Welcome to our office. I appreciate you guys coming by. Before we jump into it, just kind of want to give you guys a chance to tell the world who you are and how you got to NYXL.
Great. Cool. I'll jump in. I'll go first. My name's Ben Nickel. I'm the head of events and biz dev at NYXL. My job is to build out our events business and find great groups throughout New York City with whom we can make esports happen.
My name is Daniel Lee. I'm the event coordinator for NYXL. My job is to listen to Ben's business development plans and execute perfectly. But also outside of that, just make great connections and spread the gospel of esports.
Yeah, we're bringing esports to the people.
Nice. How did both of you guys get here? Kind of your career and trajectory and how you ended up in New York talking esports with kids in the game.
Yeah, so I guess to give a little bit backstory and context, long-time gamer, started with Smash 64. As we kind of grew up into...
Who's your favorite character?
In Smash 64, yes. Or are we talking about...
Smash.
Smash overall. All Smash.
Like, overall.
Like, ultimate, okay.
I just say 64? To make it a little...
No, let's make it overall.
Like, all right, overall.
I'm a ransom man on Ultimate, so like, I'm a lover of all characters, but probably King Dedede, just because he's nice, fat and adorable, and when you lie down, stunned, but as we kind of grew into a more online and competitive age of gaming, I find myself kind of loving the competition aspect of it, so I started playing games like League of Legends and Dota and all that CSGO. And, once I entered college, I wanted to kind of do something that has been a kind of passion of mine, which is creating communities and making connections with others about the thing I love most, which is gaming. So started the game club at UConn, and through that I wanted to get more and more involved, so I reached out to TESPA, applied for their regional coordinator position. TESPA is the collegiate branch of Blizzard, so through that I made a lot of other connections with colleges around the nation, and through that I met Ben at another collegiate event at Rutgers, and we started talking what he was doing and what kind of the vision he set out really inspired me, so I took it upon myself to apply, and here I am.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a great one. Cool. Good job, Dan. Executing perfectly.
There it is, baby.
I'm Ben. I started in esports a long time ago, before we really called it esports. Back in the day, I was, like Dan, just a passionate little nerd, and I liked to play games like Smash and like StarCraft and Halo and GoldenEye, right?
Halo was great.
Throwback to the glory days. My first esports job, I wrote articles for a website, a now defunct website called sc2gg.com, where we would provide English commentary for professional Korean Brood War StarCraft matches.
Wow.
And I had an audience. I'd write articles about it. I had an audience like 15 little nerds, and if one of them would comment, I was always really stoked. And that was where it all started. And then StarCraft II came out, and that really launched esports into this like new age. That was around 2010, 2011. And my articles became a little web show that I called 12 Weeks with the Pros, and that created a little bit of exposure around what I was doing. Took a job at ESL in Germany. Worked there for a little over a year, then moved to California to work at North American Star League, then transitioned to Red Bull, where we ran their gaming program for the last almost 5 years, and joined New York Excelsior in February, where I started doing things like recruiting guys like Dan to build the future of esports in New York.
Nice. All right, so we'll start with a softball, but if my 75-year-old grandmother walks in, mm-hmm, and asks the question, what is esports? Explain it.
Esports is people playing games together.
It is that simple. I think people really get confused by it, and they don't actually want to believe that it's... You know, I had the same conversation with my dad actually a couple weeks ago. He's like, what is this esports thing? I'm like, it's just what I did as a kid. That's it. Yeah. Just competitively. And, you know, now there's much more to it, but like, at its core, that is what it is. The next one is, how long has it technically been around in this, you know, regard? Or like, yeah, I heard you mention StarCraft II got launched in 2010, 2011. Yeah. Was that the beginning or before? I mean,
it goes back so much further. King of Kong. Go watch that documentary on Netflix.
King of Kong.
Yeah, okay. Nintendo World Championships. Go watch The Wizard, right? That old movie of the kid that had the power glove. Esports has been around for, like, people have been competing in games since there have been games. And, like, really, it's just, like, esports are the first time that it became digital, right? So, like, early Street Fighter, getting the high score in Pac-Man, you know, whatever you want to call it. I would say
Chinese arcade games and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Things you find at the street market, all mm-hmm. esports.
But I think it really became, like, a thing, an industry, around, like, 1998 to early 2000s.
Okay.
When the first StarCraft came out, early days Quake, early days Half-Life, early days, you know, Smash Brothers, when people are just starting to organize tournaments for the first time. And what happened in South Korea is StarCraft was just this huge deal, and there was this unique little culture in South Korea called the PC Bang culture, where, like, there's, like, internet cafes where kids would hang out and play games and go on dates and just, like, chill. And it became like a badge of honor to be the best StarCraft player in your PC Bang. And inevitably, you know, one day some dude walks in from the rival PC Bang down the street. He's like, "Who's the best player here?" And they have a, you know, Shogun style throwdown. And that was it. That was the first time esports happened. And you could probably argue it was in a Japanese arcade somewhere or in a LAN center in Ukraine playing Counter-Strike. But early on, it was just people organizing to see who's the best on the block. And sure enough, when people compete at a high level, there's an audience there, and that grew to be thousands of people and then hundreds of thousands of people, and today now millions of people. And an entire kind of entertainment industry has grown up around it.
Do you think it took, you know, obviously 98, 2000 compared to now technology-wise is night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it took about another decade for it to really kind of get mainstream due to the technology?
Yeah. Do you want to comment?
Yeah, kind of. Because of the streaming platform that happened around the 2010 area, Justin TV turned into Twitch TV, and through the visibility that provided, it became more accessible to people who are just lounging on their computer or iPad or whatever. And I think because of that, it's becoming more and more digitally aware, and people are finding it now on billboards everywhere. In New York City, you're going to see it in Times Square soon and all that jazz.
Yeah, man. Like, he nailed it. 2010, I call it the live streaming revolution. The first time that everybody was online, everyone had high-speed internet, and the first time it was really possible to, like, click broadcast and put your gameplay out there to the world, like, it allowed an audience to really develop, where previously the only places where you had those audiences was in the PC bangs or in the arcades where the people were. The moment we like, gained the ability to broadcast, you could be anywhere, and you could tune in for esports and watch it happen.
So, obviously, kids in the game, we work in tons of schools all over. We're talking to principals, athletic directors, families, stuff like that. When we first pitched this to some schools, it would be fair to say that principals were a little confused. There was a little pushback. What do you say to the people that are trying to get their kids off of screens, not look at their phones, not be on TV all day? What do you say to them
as far
as... What do you
say to the skeptics?
Yes, what do you say to the skeptics of esports?
What do you say to the skeptics, Dan?
Well, I say there's a lot of that, looking at the screens, and maybe they see it as a problem, but I see it as a way to connect people who share a passion around something that they enjoy, whether it be gaming on console or just texting and making fun and meeting each other, you know. I'm personally a huge fan of the meme culture and band of those that I am, so
no, I hate
there's
it.
That, but it's just... Like, even as simple as playing Smash Bros. With your friend, there's a lot to learn from that, and once you even kind of go more into it the way that professionals do, there's a lot to learn in kind of the way that works around, like, teamwork and kind of strategic development and awareness of what's happening around and all that jazz. So.
Yeah, you know, just to build on that, I think all esports is, all gaming is just organized play, right? And that's not a whole lot different from traditional sport or from music. The way a musician practices is very similar to how a gamer practices. And what I would really offer to the skeptics is gaming provides a platform to the other half who might not have had the opportunity to go out on the field and have an organized practice session with a coach who's kind of mentoring them and teaching them about hard work and sacrifice and adversity and play nice, play fair, win together, lose together, you know, learn to deal with all of that. And, you know, there's plenty that we can talk about, like with the internet and the culture of the internet and where there's cool things and inspiring things and good behavior, but also where there's bad things and toxic things and bad behavior. And I think what we really have with esports is a cool opportunity to say to the kid who might never go out for the basketball team, here's a chance to join a team and be with a group of your peers and to compete and to have that development opportunity that, you know, you're just not as interested in the case of, you know, basketball, for instance.
Great answer. I think it's a perfect segue to kind of talk about the partnership between Kids in the Game and NYXL, obviously. So we are launching an esports program for middle schools, four of them coming up actually in 2 weeks, which is great. I'll kind of kick it to you guys to talk about our different program model that you know, we all worked on and put together, and I think why the principals and families kind of jumped on board right away.
Yeah, I'll start and then I'll pass it to Dan because he's been working very diligently on the curriculum for the past couple of weeks. But the you know, the vision here and the ambition here is more or less what we just laid out. How do we create a platform for kids to organize and to come together and to play games, but to really benefit from that in a way that's in line with the, you know, same reasons that education is important and sport is important. It just is more organized play, right? So for 9 weeks after school in four killer schools up in Harlem, we're going to take these kids and give them the opportunity to play organized gaming competition for about 45 minutes a day with some specific coaching and drilling, and like, here's an objective for the day. We're going to work on passing. And then they're going to go out on the playground and they're going to play the real sports. We're actually going to kind of try to create that connection between, you know, the digital and the physical, which is, it's cool, right? It's just a cool way to kind of bridge the gap. And success looks like kids coming together and having a great relationship with their coach, having a great relationship with their teammates, having another reason to show up to school and to stay through all their classes. And what we really hope to see is these guys developing a whole lot of confidence in their play and a sort of swagger with their teammates, so that when they walk away from this thing, they can say, man, that sure was awesome. I'm really glad that I signed up for this program and I was able to compete and I was able to win and maybe even lose with my friends, but to experience that and to grow from that and to do more of that as we look to the future.
And to kind of add on to that, what we really want to get out of the children and the students that are participating is to kind of, obviously it's gaming, you know, to have fun with it, but also to learn what it's like to be in a team environment, to learn in a curriculum, to learn kind of the assets that go from bringing it from gaming to the court, and ultimately tie them together so that when the season ends, they are looking forward to a season two. And this time, instead of four schools, it's going to be every school in New York.
Yep, that is the goal for sure. Obviously, with this type of program, first time we've ever done it, we like to think, you know, this is probably our most unique and innovative program that we've run at Kids in the Game. Who else, whether it be in the States or across the world, in the youth space is kind of leading the charge?
I mean, we're at the forefront of it right now, man. I really have to applaud Kids in the Game for taking a sort of leading step. There are a few other orgs out there kind of across the country that are, we'll say, working at the fringes. First, it's most easy, I think, to talk about collegiate, which is a little bit of an older group. But, you know, in college, the kids, they're like not really kids anymore, right? The young men and young women are able to kind of self-organize in a way that's better. And for the first time, they're identifying, you know, hey, this is something that I have a passion for and I want to do. And so they can choose to contribute to it in their own way. Outside of the college groups, the TESPOs and the CSLs of the world, you know, you have a few guys that are starting to play around with high school, yep. Play Versus out in California. Yeah. Who's here in New York? It's EGF.
EGF is doing it. HSEL is also into it.
So a couple of groups beginning to play in high school. Now, middle school and youth in that earlier kind of development is, I would almost call it untapped. You have groups like Super League Gaming who have put out a business model that kind of allows for, you know, young people to come in and have a good competitive experience in a similar kind of environment, but that's not attached to education necessarily. That's kind of standalone. So, you know, people are dabbling and people are trying things, and everybody obviously sees the excitement and the opportunity around gaming, but we're at the forefront, man. Kids in the Game is one of the groups that's leading the way.
Speaking on colleges, will every college, or most, let's say, move to offering scholarships for this?
Man, I hope so. I tried doing that at back at UConn before I eventually graduated, but you see it now more often than as time goes on, more colleges and more administration is hopping on the train of esports and bringing in colleges. First, it started off with UC Irvine and RMU kind of making that big.
They were the first one? UC Irvine?
Robert Morris was the first.
And RMU was.
In Illinois.
Chicago.
Yeah. And then UCI kind of made it
right behind.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they started their own Zotcade, their esports arena in UCI Irvine campus, and then now, like, a whole bunch of schools in the Midwest and even like bigger schools are kind of hopping on board. UCal, UC Irvine, RMU,
mm-hmm.
all those people are kind of hopping on the train of collegiate esports.
Yeah. So will every college get involved? It's impossible to say, but mm-hmm. you know, every college in the world doesn't have a sports program. So I think especially the ones that are progressive and technology forward, and especially the ones that have like gaming development curriculum and things like that, they're probably going to be the groups that lean in first. And as the whole scene grows and as developers continue to push more money into development, you know, we know that East Coast Conference and NCAA and these Pac-10 and these like serious groups are really looking at it and trying to figure out, you know, what is the thing that we're going to do. So it'll come. And it's probably going to come pretty fast. I'd say you'll probably see twice as many scholarships in the next 2 years as we have this year. And 2 years after that, who knows?
So that would have been an exponential growth. It started with like one first year, and then three, and then it's been growing to 10. Now we're getting numbers in the dozens that are hopping in per year.
And is it just for certain games?
It starts off as certain games, but as the program at the schools kind of evolve and they get more funding and all that stuff, they're going to bring in more games. And even now, more games are kind of introducing themselves into the scene, and we're probably likely going to see more additions.
Yeah, but it's really important that we understand that it doesn't all map back to playing games, right? It actually maps back to the industry of esports. So, like, while these clubs and organizations are hosting gaming competition, there are all these other incredibly cool transferable skills that they're applying, like how do I create an event, and how do I produce a broadcast, and how do I teach my talent to look at the camera and to read what's on this card, to marketing, to ticket sales, to all these components that exist in sport management, in live event production, and live event management. These are all skills that you develop in esports. So yes, there's a lot of gameplay and a lot of fun stuff that happens there, but there's an industry that exists around it with video editors and graphic artists and all this. And so like, I think the reason that it's becoming so sticky for colleges is because all of a sudden now you have a major track that you can get involved with that you're super passionate about. You might not know that you want to be an audio engineer. You might just want to produce sound for an esports show because they need it and you like esports. But then, holy shit, I love producing audio. Sorry for the
language. No.
Yeah,
it was
close. We were doing such a good
episode 10. First swear. We're okay.
Yeah, man, like it's all transferable and it's all awesome. And I think the thing that gets me so fired up is this idea that we can take these young kids through the Kids in the Game program and say, look, this is how you run a live stream. And now they can take that home and they can start creating their own shows and their own content, and who knows where they go with it. The sky's the limit.
Similar to the question about who's leading the way in the U space, who was first in the pro team and pro league industry to jump on, and where do you see that going? And is everyone involved yet?
That's probably not alive.
It's been around for a while, man, and people have tried to professionalize the industry a few times through the years. You know, I think though it really starts with the game developers. So for me to like, we can talk about the early 2000s when there were all these other third-party groups like running tournaments. Like ESL was founded in the early 2000s, and Major League Gaming was founded in the early 2000s, and these grew into big businesses that got acquired by huge media companies, right? So those are amazing success stories. But I think esports really started when the developers began to double down and say, we're going to funnel not just games out into the world, but like marketing dollars into the development of these programs. And we're going to create professional leagues like the LCS and the Overwatch League. And I got to give the nod to Blizzard. Like Overwatch League is the first franchised, regionally based, like locally operated esports league. And they've had some incredible successes in generating, you know, commercial interest and bringing on huge sponsors and creating the big, you know, media deals that allow for a sort of sustainable esports economy in the same way that, you know, the sports business works. It's all funded by TV and advertising and sponsorship and ticket sales, right? And so when a developer decides to turn that engine on, it just validates it instantly. And then, of course, there's the sponsors that have been around for years and years. But I'd say it started with, you know, Blizzard saying we want esports to be a thing, you know, whenever they did in the early 2000s and then really significantly in 2010.
Where do you see the NBA, NFL, MLB, all the pro leagues? I know that a bunch of them are involved. Some of them have teams. Where do you see that going in the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, I mean, sports entertainment, or maybe I should say esports entertainment, is an extension of sports entertainment, or it's becoming that, right? Your big, you know, quote, billionaire team owners, they're all sports team owners, right? New York Excelsior has ownership with, you know, connections to the New York Mets. The Boston Uprising is connections to Kraft and the, you know, the Patriots team. And that's like something you see just time and again all around the country and all around the world. So, you know, they plug in as being the, you know, curators of professional stuff. We're going to run the teams. We're going to build the stadiums. We're going to host the home games. And we're going to turn, we're going to make this thing real. And yeah, I couldn't. First movers, was that part of the question? If it is, it was Robert Kraft and then Jeff Wilpon.
Kind of also to add on that, like developers that are tied to NBA, like NBA 2K, like in FIFA, they're starting.
Yeah, because 2K kind of has its own.
Here in New York, they have their 2K league that's happening. Yep. Yep. Season's going to start up soon, but they're also moving and operating to kind of make a franchise league where teams from that are directly yep. influenced by those NBA teams create their own esports teams and kind of compete.
Yeah, gotcha. That's exactly right. 2K leagues had an awesome success. We see the guys over at Madden starting to really ramp up their programs. FIFA's doing some cool stuff around the world. So, yes, they are major players, and those are just more paths that are opening up for people that want to get into esports.
Nice. Well, you guys crushed it. Now we just have – we usually ask at the end of every podcast what your favorite slice is, favorite New York City slice.
Yeah, nice.
And you know, you're not going to get that question. Favorite New York City slice and favorite restaurant in New York. We're going to skip it and say favorite video game. Mm. And overall, you have to answer best video game ever made.
Oh, my gosh.
So go favorite oh first. God. That's got to be somewhat easy.
We don't want to dodge the original question, though.
Yeah,
we're going to answer
it. All right. You want to go slice? You want to go slice?
Yes, there is.
All right, so we'll answer all four. The favorite New York City slice.
Favorite New York City slice is a margarita slice from Champion Pizza.
No? Wow.
What's wrong?
Champion Pizza. Where's Champion Pizza?
Champion Pizza's all over New York. They're everywhere.
So it's a chain.
It's a New York chain.
New York chain. Champion Pizza. First answer. First answer of that. Okay.
I feel like I'm disappointed the New York.
I don't know. I mean, we've gotten 9 of these now. We're going to have to put together a list. So Champion Pizza. Okay.
Honestly, I've been here for like 6 months. And I've probably had pizza like once here. So I don't even know where I went. But
wow, that's a shame. We're going to have to bring you.
Pizza New York is best.
All right.
That's all I can say.
And the best restaurant
in New York. It's a political answer. Good job.
Best restaurant in New
York. Unanimously is Gun Bay.
Gun Bay. Where is that?
It's right down the street.
And what does it serve?
Korean barbecue.
Wow, okay.
It's the official food of esports.
Gun Bay. You're giving them clout. We're going to have to go and actually deliver on that, and hopefully they can get us some food for the kids.
So next is favorite game and best game ever?
Favorite game. Ever played, yeah. And then if you had to come to a consensus for the best game ever created, what would you say?
Pick one game.
No, but if you could, yeah. Can do yourselves.
What's for you first? Favorite game?
Kingdom Hearts.
Okay, typical answer.
Yeah.
My favorite game is Super Smash Bros. Melee.
See, I don't even know what that game is, but I know Super Smash. Yeah.
It's okay.
You need to experience Kingdom Hearts. You need to do yourself that favor. It's a special game.
So those are your favorites.
And then greatest game ever made.
Greatest game ever made.
I'm going to say Half-Life. Half-Life 1.
Hollow Knight.
Get the hell out of
here. Just because it's topical, is Fortnite in the top 10 of best games ever made? Is top 20 easier?
Fortnite is a great game, but Fortnite is great for different reasons than being
maybe not
the greatest
of
game ever
played.
Game, right? It's like the game that
how it was. Yeah, okay.
It's the game that most recently moved the industry forward.
Yeah.
In a huge way, right? And before Fortnite, it was PUBG. So I'd probably call PUBG like a more important game than Fortnite. But Fortnite's the one that brought it to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Like without PUBG, I don't know that we ever would have had a Fortnite. Maybe
that
would have
been
impossible to say.
Right. Popular.
But is it the best game ever? Any like long time esports person is going to say no to that because we have our own biases. We've been in it for longer. There's a whole generation of kids that thinks
you ask a
10-year-old. Yeah, exactly.
10-year-olds.
Yeah.
And it's a great game. It is a very special game. It's huge. It's changed the entire landscape of the industry, and it's super important.
They do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, listen, guys, this was awesome. Thank you guys for coming. Really appreciate it. We'll probably do one more of these after the program ends. Can't wait for it to launch. Super exciting stuff. And obviously, we'll keep everyone posted on the program. And we'll be back soon. Thanks, you guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store and be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kids in the Game NY and Facebook at Kids in the Game NYC.